Welcome to the Acceptable Accuracy Podcast. I'm Philip.
And I'm Tyler.
And today, we are going to jump right into it. We're going to talk about the Wolverine 5K Tactical Adventure Race. All right, Tyler. I'm going to give you the hardball question. What is the Wolverine 5K Tactical Adventure Race?
So, the Wolverine Tactical Adventure Race is a tactical adventure race. So, it happens...
Nailed it. Episode over.
All right. The end. I'm ready to go home. But... it's an adventure challenge that is a modified three-gun challenge that happens in Lake City, Michigan, which is about central Michigan. And it involves using a pistol, a carbine, and a long-range rifle. So it's really hard to put into words of what it is, but it is based off of the movie, which is...
Red Dawn, but the good one. Mm-hmm. From the 80s with Patrick Swayze.
Which, unfortunately, I've never seen it myself. So
you should be very careful admitting that, because I think that's required viewing if you're going to attend the Wolverine 5K.
Which is funny, because I've done it twice, and I've already told the guy who runs it, and he laughed at me and said, "You're disqualified." And he said, "I'm kidding." But it is ran over at MTC, which is the Marksmanship Training Center. Yeah. In Lake City. And it's a challenge adventure race that happens once a year in the summer, typically the first or second weekend of June. And they're typically made of four-man teams or solo athletes. And it's a great time. It consists of a 5K and a shooting portion. So they're two separate things. You'll do a 5K where you'll navigate basically the forests of Lake City. Yeah. What's it called again? I can't
There's
remember.
A national forest up there, Manistee.
That's what forest. It was. Yep.
Yep.
And typically there are two different divisions. You have a hardcore division and you have a recreational division. If you're a rec team, you can use a GPS. You're basically given different waypoints and you go out and look for different checkpoints based off of a map. And you're doing a 5K where you do basically just a big circle and you'll get back. And if you're hardcore, you have a map and a compass. Good luck, bro.
Use your azimuths. Let's go. That's actually a great introduction, Tyler. I think you nailed pretty much all of it. It is a one-day event, so it is a really long day this past year. And again, we'll dive into this down the road here. But this year there was a canoe part, a 5K ruck, and then like 10 shooting stages, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. I remember they started this year and they were like, you're not going to get done by the end of the day. I think actually most teams did complete all of the stages.
I feel like because they said you're not going to finish it, everyone was like, no, we're going to finish it.
Yeah, and so really it's a time management thing as well. So it just, you know, it helps add to the, you know, the things that you have to do and increase your stress level or attempt to anyway. Anyway, we're actually going to do this in a three-part series. This first episode is going to be basically like, what is the race? Some general information on it so you can kind of get a visual and an understanding of the event and what it is. And then we're actually going to dip into gear and the gear that the two of us brought to the event. The second episode will be about the training that we did as a team and the skill sets that you need to be able to compete in an event like this, in case you're thinking of doing a tactical adventure race like this or any other tactical adventure race that may be out there. And the last episode, we'll actually go step through the event itself, and we're hoping to grab the other two team members that are part of this event. So like Tyler mentioned in the intro, it is a four-person team. Tyler and I are two of those four people, so we make up the younger half of our team and the better looking half.
I don't know about that, but all right. I mean, you have been on TV, Philip.
Oh, wow. I don't think it was for my looks, though. But, yeah, I think you did a really good job of kind of covering what the 5K is. And I really like the fact that you pointed out the difference between the obviously there's a pistol, but you point out the difference between the carbine and the long range. Because traditionally, when you shoot a three-gun match, it's usually pistol, carbine, shotgun. In this case, it's actually a carbine, which is typically an AR platform. Or we saw a few people with...
AKs.
Like, there were a couple AKs there because it is Wolverine, you know, 5K, and it's based off of Red Dawn.
Them commies, bro.
Yep. And then there were also a few people that would have like scars or whatever. Anything basically, but the AR-15 definitely dominates this. But there is a difference because the range in Lake City, MTC, that we talked about earlier, they do go out to 1,000 yards at two of the different bays, and they will actually require that you have a rifle to reach out that distance. So you'll have one bolt-action gun. A few years back, they changed it, because it used to be everybody had to have one, but they realized that not everyone was into long-range precision shooting, mm-hmm. so they changed it up very wisely to only require the bolt gun. So that it kind of require or hits the requirements from like a firearms perspective, but there are some additional requirements as well. So Tyler, you touched on hardcore and recreational. What are the differences between those two divisions?
Yeah. So the primary difference between the two divisions is in the hardcore division, you are required to wear a plate carrier and body armor, really a plate carrier. And your carrier for the ruck, you had to carry, I believe it was 50 or 60 pounds for the ruck itself.
It's 45, I think.
It might be 45, yeah. Around there.
Total.
Total, yep. And you, there are guys who just did a backpack, some type of rucksack that came out to that. Some guys, I personally chose to do a carrier with a backpack. So this way, my weight will be evenly distributed between the front and the back. So, because that's what I chose to do. And all, whereas recreational, they only needed to carry like a 25 pound pack for it. And for the shooting stages, you had to wear body armor or a plate carrier, and that had to be about 20 pounds, I believe.
I think it was only 14.
Really?
Yeah, I remember it was less.
Clearly, than I did not do my research for it. I'm okay. Doing this all off of memory, but certain amount of weight that you had to carry on your carrier for it. Whereas recreational, you don't need a carrier.
Yeah, just a belt with your pistol on it. Yep.
And also, a lot of the stages, as a hardcore team member, you were required to keep your rifle slung. If it was a stage where you're doing both rifle and pistol, you could not put your rifle on the ground. You couldn't ground your rifle. Yet, typically, it would be empty at that point, but you had to keep it slung. Whereas a recreational, because there are stages where you had to like flip tires, you had to keep your rifle slung if you're hardcore. Yep. If you were recreational, you could put your rifle down, flip the tire, and then shoot with your pistol. So it's minor differences like that.
Yeah, and then with hardcore, it's like there are stages, and again, we'll get into that into a later episode, but there are stages that require you to get in and out of vehicles in years previous. So it does add additional like bulk to you, so there's always that challenge. I would say that the teams are split definitely between half hardcore, half recreational. People that are in hardcore, the only ones that can be considered for like a top place finish. They reward places 1 through 3. Typically, like this past year, there were 18 hardcore teams and 18 recreational teams, mm-hmm. plus a few individuals as well. The requirement is that you have to have a 4-person team if you're going to do it, but there are individuals that can run it, and you can actually slot yourself into teams that, for example, can't get a full 4 for whatever reason. Somebody gets sick or drops out, and they'll try to match you up with a full team. In the past, I should say, too, that this is the 4th Wolverine 5K that I've done, and then Tyler was your second one?
Was that my correct? Second, yep.
Yep. And the first 3 years that I did it, we did it as a recreational. I did it with a gentleman that were quite a bit older, in their 60s.
What are you saying about 60-year-olds, man?
That they're quite a bit older than I am. and then very older, very much older than Tyler. We did it recreational, and then we formed a new team this year, and one of the team members was like, we're doing hardcore. So we opted to do hardcore this year. So we can definitely speak from both sides of the aisle. Again, we'll get into the training episode at some point, but if you train with your body armor on, it will literally just disappear on you. And it's also a great opportunity to really test your equipment, right?
I agree.
Like the stuff that you have. Because you're going to get down and dirty. You're going to get in and out of cars. You're going to bang on stuff. You're going to go underneath like faux barbed wire and all those things that you're going to get carriers caught on. And it really gives you an opportunity to figure out what does and what does not work instead of just having a plate carrier chilling in your closet. Okay, so I think that's pretty much the difference between the requirements of hardcore and recreational. As we step through some of the gear that we brought, we'll bring in some of the concepts and ideas and reasons why we brought certain things versus other. For example, on your belt, you typically want a retention holster so that you can like dig around in the dirt, crawl in the dirt, you know, potentially have the gun. Like if you're using a USPSA holster, not going to cut it. It's going to fall out and you're going to get DQ'd. So you need something that can allow the gun to stay with you no matter what you're doing. And again, we'll dig into that and like those requirements and why this is different than a traditional like three gun match where you're wearing your flashy jersey and you've got race holsters and race shotguns and race rifles and all that stuff. All right, Tyler, let's drop into this real quick. We're going to start off with kind of like what we brought and how it did and did not work. The first thing I like to talk about is the carbine. What did you bring, Tyler?
Yeah, so like Philip said earlier, it's predominantly used for, most people predominantly use ARs for this. So I used an AR-15. And my first year, I can't remember, but I believe I used my 11.5-inch AR pistol for my first year. I can't remember. No, I did not.
Did you use an 18-inch rifle?
I think I did.
Yeah, I think you might have. And like you had your pistol all the time.
Because I didn't have an 11.5-inch yet at that point. So I either used that or did I borrow yours?
I don't think you borrowed it.
I did. But either way, so my first year, I most likely used my 18-inch AR-15. And it worked, but come to find out, I got stuck a lot.
Yep.
Because once again, it's an 18-inch. It's hard to move around. And I was having a lot of issues with it. My second year, I was planning on using my 11.5-inch AR-15. However, this was when we were going through the whole pistol brace ban with the ATF. And the rule would have gone into effect.
Like 3 days or 4 days previous.
It was like, it was end of May.
Yep.
And the competition was June 3rd.
Yes.
So it was like crazy. So I was back and forth about it, but I chose like, all right, just for now, I'm going to use a 16-inch AR instead. And that day I chose to use a simple Palmetto State PSA AR-15. Nothing special. 16-inch worked great. I used a Holosun Red Dot with a 3X magnifier. And next year, because there is a stop on the pistol brace thing, I will be using my 11.5-inch AR-15 with a primary arms 1-6 LPVO. So it works for me. That's what I personally enjoy using a lot. And I use a Blue Force Gear Vickers sling. So
yeah, I know you mentioned that earlier with the like the sling requirement. You do really need to make sure you have a very adequate swing mounting points, because you can't just put the rifle down or in a barrel like you can in a traditional match. One thing that we haven't really touched on either, and why Tyler used the magnifier last year and then is switching to LPVO this coming year, is there are courses of fire for carbines that definitely go out to, it depends, every year is a little different, but this year I think we went out to 300 yards on one of the stages, and then there's another stage that every year they do some kind of precision carbine stage as well too, where you get more points by getting in the tin ring, and you actually typically have a chance to win a rifle as well too, so you need something that's got pretty good precision at it at 100 yards. LPVO tends to offer the best kind of both worlds, but I think Tyler proved actually quite adequately that you can run a magnifier with a red dot, because there was a stage where we were in the back of a vehicle that was moving and I was running an LPVO, and I'll kind of get into that when I talk about my rifle in a second here, but I ended up having issues getting like proper like sight alignment on the scope, just because it was obviously you don't usually ride in the back of a vehicle shooting from a rifle and you're running into issues where you've got the problem of getting the proper eye box and getting ghosting on the scope, whereas like you had the red dot and you were able to pick up the target quickly, and I definitely dropped points on that stage as a result.
Why do I feel like I did use your 16 inch my first year, because you used your 11, because you had your 11.5-inch. I think year. I did borrow your 16 inch my first year.
That could be
because I hated my 18 inch. Either way, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But
so my rifle I actually used for this year, because the same thing, I used a pistol, air pistol last year with a brace, and because of the law change, or I shouldn't say law change, the ruling change, I actually switched out to my first AR that I ever owned, which is a Wyndham Weaponry 16-inch, like pretty basic rifle. I mean, it's got a free flow handguard. I did upgrade the trigger to a Timney trigger on it and ran a LPVO on it. It was not an overly expensive one. It was just a Vortex Strike Fire 1-8. And again, it was the glass was...
Oh, yeah, your Strike Eagle.
Yep, Strike Eagle. Sorry, thank you. The Strike Eagle, and the glass was almost limiting on that. And I will actually be changing that up for next year when I'm running. There are cases that... There are advantages to having a shorter rifle in a match like this, especially if you're in and out of obstacles a lot, in and out of a vehicle, all that kind of stuff. So next year I'll actually be switching over to, I did do an SBR at the ATF and everything, so I'll actually be SBRing, running my SBR next year. Okay, so that's pretty much it with the rifle. There's not really any limitations on what you can and cannot bring to the match. If you want to run a suppressor, and I may even run one next year, you can do so. There's nothing that says you can't. You could run a LPVO with a red dot offset if that's your jam. Really, there's not much of a limitation. They did make a rule change for this coming year where you have to, the carbine that you bring and all the pistol carbine and long range rifle that you bring, you cannot swap them out. So you have to use them on every single course of fire. Mm-hmm. That is a new rule changing this coming year, which actually begs the question.
Really?
You should then be required to wear your body armor the whole time, even on the ruck. You shouldn't be able to switch out your body armor either.
Yeah, exactly, like that's, if that's the case.
Yep.
By the way, I found all the pictures. I use my 11.5-inch AR. I used my pistol my first year.
Oh, nice. You must have just gotten it then.
I think I got it for the competition.
Because I remember there was that car stage where we were both really glad that we had it because we were shooting in and out of windows.
Yep, I remember now.
Yep.
And I just got my 3X magnifier. So I remember I did a red dot and a magnifier that year.
Nice.
With my shorty. That's what it was.
All right. So then pistol, obviously. Okay. So the one thing I will say with all these items, you want to make sure that they are hard use, hardware items, because it does get pretty dusty at that range typically.
You are sand everywhere.
Dude. Yep. You are in and out of the dirt. You're going to be potentially going prone or urban prone, which means you're going to be putting your pistol in, into the dirt while it's in its holster. We've had people that had pistols go down, people that had red dots that went down. For a pistol, I am a Smith & Wesson, I wouldn't say fanboy. I like them because I have really large hands just due to my height, and they have palm swells on the back of them versus like most pistols that have swappable back straps. Just push the gun back,
yep,
or the grip back into your hand instead of the M&P, which like actually swells around your hand. But I ran a Performance Center M&P core with a Delta Point red dot on top of it. I have only ever had one issue with that pistol, and it was more recently. It's one that common that people have is not during the match, but I actually had the red dot shear off the top of that just due to the length of, especially the Delta Point, length of the screws into the pistol, and the screws that provided by M&P were not overly strong and they're tapered, so it popped off. But that pistol, I've run that pistol now for the past two matches, maybe even three, and it has ran fantastic. I've had zero issues with it. Mm-hmm. I always oil my guns up before the match. Never go over top on the oil just because it does get dusty, but ran super well. Tyler, what did you run for a pistol this year?
So I ran my Shadow Systems MR920 War Poet Edition, but to kind of backtrack a little bit about what Philip was talking about, I'm a big fan of pick an operating system and stick with it. That's my personal philosophy when it comes to pistols and really firearms in general. It's like tools. You pick a company, whether DeWalt or Milwaukee,
right,
or whatever, and stick with it. So now you have the same chargers and you can interchange a lot of things. So I'm the same thing when it comes to pistols because of holster compatibility, mags, etc. So I was pretty confident that I was going to stick. I started off with Smith & Wesson. I started with the M&P Shield and then a Shield Plus. But unfortunately, Philip knows this, but I had tons of issues with my Shield Plus early on. I had probably 1,000 rounds through it and maybe 200 failure to feeds. Come to find out, it was an issue with the gun itself, and I should have sent it in for warranty, and it runs flawless now. Yeah. But because of that, I chose to go away from Smith & Wesson, and I decided, okay, I want to go towards the Glock platform because here in America, everyone's got a Glock.
Yeah, magazines are all over the place.
Magazines all over the place, holster compatibility, rest in peace. Mr. Glock, by the way, because he did just pass away a couple days ago at the time of this recording. So I decided I knew I wanted to trick it up one day. So I was like, why not just get a Shadow System, spend $1,000 on the gun instead of buying a $500-$600 gun and spending $1,000 to $1,500 to do what Shadow System has already done. And I'm a big Warrior Poet fan, as Philip Brady knows too.
Yes.
So I, long story, I used my Shadow System's MR920, which is basically a Gucci Glock 19 clone. It runs flawlessly. I use it for concealed carry. I use it for this, USPSA. And it's really the only pistol that I use now 99% of the time.
Yeah, and one thing I will say, too, about having a red dot on this.
Yes, and we have a red dot on,
yep.
too. So we have the same red dot.
We do now. Because I had that last match at the Delta Point, but I have since switched over to the 507C with the Vulcan reticle.
Yep.
But this match is unique in that anytime there's a paper target out, that only A-zone hits count.
Yeah, that's right.
So having, and it's not to say you can't run irons, and plenty of people have, and in the first year I ran it, the vast majority of people were running irons, myself included. And then like the next year I was running a red dot, and there may be two other red dots, but I think as it progresses and most people switch to the red dot, just for those precision shots, because they'll have some pretty good pistol shots, like at distance or even on the move. There was one year where we were driving in the back of a vehicle, different than last year where we had to shoot like the pistol coins. They're maybe, I don't know, like what, 8 inches, maybe not even that big, 6 inch pistol targets.
I think so, yeah.
And you had to shoot them while you're driving the back of a truck, right? So not saying you can't do that with irons, but it's a lot easier to do it with a red dot. Yep. For sure.
And it's easier if your hamstring doesn't cramp on you.
Yeah, that's right. Your teammates back you up.
That's true. Spoiler alert, I had a hamstring cramp at the back of a pickup truck, so I needed Philip to take some backup shots.
Didn't you also have a arm cramp up too in the last year? For those of you who don't know Tyler, Tyler is probably the most physically in shape of all of us, and he did drink plenty of water, plenty of Gatorade, and ate bananas. So.
And coconut water. And I still had cramps every year, which is really frustrating to me.
Yep.
Because this is my jam. The physical stuff is my, like, flipping tires, that's fun to me.
Yeah.
And yet, I was the one who had all the cramps.
Yes.
Was really annoying.
Yeah, and I can't even chalk it up to this last year. I think you were at the bottom of the totem pole per se, though, so you had a lot of weight on your shoulders.
But even then, but whatever. Well, what had happened was we had one stage. We will talk more about this in episode 3 of this, or part 3. We had one stage where we all had gas masks on, and we had to carry a log over our heads. The problem is, I'm 5'8", and Philip is 6'6", so... Thinking about physics, all of us had to have the log over our heads.
Yep. So who's getting the most of it on the incline? Tyler.
Tyler, the shortest of the bunch.
Also the strongest of the bunch.
Yay.
Okay, so moving into like the long-range rifle. So this is a space that we'll let one of our other teammates talk a little bit about more during episode 3. But between Tyler and I, we own one bolt gun, and it's one that I've had a sordid history with to finally get some ammo that runs through it.
So I love how Philip just said, yeah, between Tyler and I, we have one bolt gun. And I've had a lot of history with it. I'm like, just say Tyler doesn't own one.
Tyler doesn't own a bolt gun. So it's been a challenge to kind of get that up and running. I've tried different like style long-range weapons and finally have this one tuned in. However, the one that we had for this year was a 308 bolt action that one of our other teammates provided. Like I mentioned, every teammate has to have a pistol and a carbine, but you share the bolt gun, or you can do semi-auto if you want. Like, you just need something that can shoot out to 1,000. This bolt gun specifically was in 308, all hand loads, so we were able to kind of, like, get out to that 1,000-yard range requirement that we had. I don't know what the action or what, you know, brand or stock or any of that information about what he was using. I do know he had a Night Force scope on it. And it worked just fine in his rounds. Everything ran flawlessly when we used it. And he has all the dope information. So he, one of the nice things they let us do this year, and I can't remember if they let us do it the year previous or not, but obviously if you have one person in the group that's really good at long range, it behooves you to learn from that individual, obviously, as a teammate. But we asked before going into these courses of fire, could we allow the person whose gun it is to dial for us? And because it is a team match, the answer was yes. So you had to change who was firing the rifle. So all four people, for example, on one of the stages had to fire these long-range targets. But you could have the person who owned the gun or whoever dial the gun for you. So we would actually have the guy that owned the gun, shot Daryl was his name, shot first, and then he would dial for himself, and then we had the ranges given to us in advance. So we would call him out, and we'd call the Mills information as well. I guess it's MOA, but call out the information in advance. So he would dial and then fire, and then when he was done, we would switch off to the next shooter, and then he would dial for that next shooter up and down as needed, and then having an additional third person calling off what the distances were so that they could be properly dialed.
Yep. And also, it's one thing to add, I believe all of the stages were based off of par time and not hit mm-hmm. factor. So it doesn't matter if you speed through it and get done before the end Correct. Of time. So especially for the long range, we found it smart, especially after my first year of doing it, to have the least experienced long distance shooter to go last. So this way we can get as many targets as possible. Because last year, I believe I went second or third. I went third and we ran out of time.
Right.
So last year or this year, I went last and I was actually able to, we were all able to get through to it because I wasn't slowing everybody down because long distance shooting is not my forte.
And yeah, it seems like a little bit of gaming on a match that necessarily isn't about gaming. However, if you look at this from a practical application, you're not going to give the newest shooter who has not a lot of experience on the bolt gun the bolt gun.
Definitely
right?
not, no.
Typically, it would be all the four people would have the person who is the second most experienced within your spotter, but we don't have a spotter, being the most experienced, right? Yep. I think that's how sniper teams do it in the military. But in this case, you are trying
you
to...
You actually want the most experienced person to be your spotter.
Correct, yeah. That's what I'm saying. And then, but in this case, the idea is you want to get those shots off, you know, engage the targets as quickly as possible, and then get as many points as you can. So we opted to go in order of skill for long range shooters to get the much points on the front end. And then just whatever time we had left working through with that individual that was left. I think Tyler and I were the last two.
We were.
On the rifle.
It was Daryl, Brent, you, then me. And I believe, I can't remember, I believe you only had one shot per target as well.
Correct. I think were there three or four targets in that stage?
There's four.
And then you had to engage all of them at various distances. And
these ones were animal silhouettes in this case. It was like a deer, elk, and then two other ones I can't remember.
Yeah, and I will say that having somebody that has the rifle with really good dope on it and a good trigger, a good scope, really makes up for, and people always say it's not the arrow, it's the, you know, it's the Indian, but it can make up for a lot of, like, if we're just trigger pullers, and everybody else can do the work to get there, and as long as you can, like, light on it, it does truly really help, and I think in this case, it's helped us. The year previous, we had some Magnum caliber rifle that the previous team member had that literally was super flat shooting way out to long distances and had a fantastic scope. It was super easy to shoot, had a really nice massive break on it, and it was like shooting butter.
I know. I remember when I shot it in the competition, I went for the target, and the RO there was like, this guy's dope is way off, and I verbally said, no, I just don't know what I'm doing. I shot the wrong target. He's like, oh, you're an idiot then. I'm like, gee, thanks.
there's a massive amount of skill sets, and we'll go over this obviously in episode 2, and I keep saying, you know, down the road. But there's a lot of information to cover in even one episode. Trying to fit it all in one or two episodes and three episodes is going to be pretty challenging because there's going to be a lot of information.
Unless you want to listen for like 4 hours.
I know, right? Which I'm pretty sure nobody wants to listen to us prattle on that long. Okay, so anyway, enough about the long-range rifle. Again, we kind of mentioned earlier that there is a belt and holster requirement, both from a pistol and magazine requirement for your equipment, along with any other accoutrement that you want to have on your belt and holster. So I guess I'll kind of kick this one off real quick. This year, I switched over to the name of the company is switching my mind. I got this belt, and I have a couple of their belts too. Core, thank
you. Core Essentials.
So I switched over to a Core belt. I was using one that was more of a flappy cloth belt. It was an inner and outer belt, but it was just kind of getting in the way. I wanted something a little bit more low profile. I really like the way that the Core has got the adjustability to click in and out. So I switched to that belt this year. Ran like super well. Was really happy with it, and it's an inner outer belt setup. And then for a holster, I run a Safari Land ALS holster with their retention holster, and it's got Technically, I think it's like level 2 retention, but it's one that
it's level 2.
It's one that like the retention on it will like grasp on the slide of the pistol on the top, so that it is impossible to pull that gun out of there unless you press the button to remove it. So when you're in the dirt doing whatever it is, it's not going to pop out or fall out like a USPSA holster might. One of the other nice things I really like about it, because it is I'm shooting a red dot. This actually has when you holster it, the sheath of the holster actually covers the entire pistol, including a flap on top for the red dot. And I will be honest, there are many, many years I've had this holster now for 3 years I've used it. And there's many times, whether it was rain or dust or crawling in the dirt, where having that little flap on the top has honestly like saved my bacon. It has been a really fantastic addition. So if you have it and you run this race, put it back on if you've taken it off to run. So that's the holster. And I do run I run my pistol with a Streamlight TLR1 on the pistol as well, just because I figure if I'm going to have it, I might as well buy the holster and everything to match it. Again, use the gear that you would want to run for something like this if it were to happen. Then for mag holsters, I use a set of S-Tech mag holsters. They're called the Kiwis. And
S-Tech Kiwis.
They do retention via a piece of Kydex that's on the inside mm-hmm. of like a cloth, like shell on the outside. And they're really easy and really smooth to pull the magazines out of, both from a pistol and a rifle perspective, for the magazines. But they do a fantastic job of retention. And I've run that belt in matches outside of the Wolverine 5K and just been extremely happy with the way that those the mag holsters function. So typically I carry 4 pistol mags on my belt, just because you never know if you're going to jam up. A lot of stages, people tend to in these matches be heavy on pistol, because it's easier to shoot pistol, especially at close range, than it is to try to get people to shoot like rifle, and obviously less pistol rounds than a pistol mag. Even though I do run 24 round or 23 round pistol mags, and then I run one AR-15 mag on my belt, and then we'll get into the carrier later where I've got more. And then on the back of it, I do run from Feral Concepts. They came out with their Roll One like medical pouch, primarily what people use it for. I put that in my carrier.
That's on your carrier, yep. Yeah.
But I do swap that in and out between the two depending on the type of match it is. I think that's about it on my belt. I sometimes run a knife. One thing that you can run too that's really nice to have is a dump pouch. Mm-hmm. Even if it doesn't call for it, have it there, because a lot of these stages would call for a magazine that was downloaded, either your pistol or your rifle or both, down to 10 or 20 or 2 or 3 or whatever. And knowing which magazines are the ones you're supposed to start with, so you're not messing around trying to pull the correct one out of your belt, I just put those right into my dump pouch, and those are the ones I start with. So I know exactly what those are. I make sure I don't violate any of their rules for starting that specific course of fire. I know which ones I need to load in. They're easy to grab, easy to put in immediately. And then again, from there, load from any of the other magazines that I have in my belt.
You don't have Skittles in your dump pouch?
I do not have Skittles in my dump pouch. every once in a while, maybe I'll put a Gatorade in there.
There you go. What kind of dump pouch do you use?
So the dump pouch is a Maxpedition dump pouch. I forget the name of it. I should know.
Isn't it like a roly thing?
It's like a roly poly or something, but I don't remember the exact name. And it works pretty good. It's not a lot of dump pouches nowadays. There's nothing wrong with these. I think Tyler runs one, but they're like a nylon.
It is,
and they're lighter. They're super lightweight and super small. And they seem to be fairly durable. This one is definitely like a nylon, like material that's or heavier duty. What do they call that material that they use?
I have no idea.
Anyway, I forget. So it's a pretty heavy duty material, and it fits like easily a couple AR mags and a couple pistol mags in and out pretty easy.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess I'll go ahead and talk about my belt setup. My belt setup is actually very similar to Phillip's in the sense of what I put on it. The belt itself that I use is a Blue Alpha Gear Molly belt. And definitely in multicam, because I'm a I'm a professional LARPer, right?
Well, yeah, mine's all Ranger Green.
So what I do, what I have, like I said, is a blue alpha with a nice Cobra buckle. It's a inner outer as well. I really like that because once I get it on there, it's there. It's not moving at all. It's not moving anywhere. The holster that I use, same thing as a Safariland 6390, that for a TLR1 for a Glock 17. And I was really back and forth for a while. I conceal carry a tier one holster and I love it. Mm. It's a great holster. I've been conceal carrying it now for 3 years, 4 years now. And I was thinking about going that route for a level two holster. However, after talking to Philip, he was doing the Wolverine 5K because of the rain and the dust. It would be nice to have some type of a hood to cover your red dot to protect it from the elements. And I'm like, all right, that sold me, because it's about the same price. But I kind of went for, I went that route, even though personally, sorry, future Safariland sponsors, I think they're ugly. I just think they're ugly. I'll admit it.
I don't mind the way they look.
Which is
funny. I think it's just because you're so used to seeing them out there and people running them.
That could be why. Because I know you have a whole, I know it's not tier one level two holster, but you have a level two holster for your Palmetto State Dagger that you use. And that's similar to what a tier one holster is. And that's what I would prefer. I think aesthetically it looks better. And based off of my research, the thumb release is actually better on a tier one at least.
Yeah.
But I do like my Safariland. I love it a lot. I've had no issues with it. Can't complain. And that's what I use for my holster. And I also use a drop leg shroud on mine as well with a leg strap. I like it a lot. I know Philip doesn't. He had issues with it. Why don't you tell that story, actually?
And I ran it at a few matches, and I did not like it because it kept pulling my pants down.
It was weird, which is funny to me. I'm like, really?
Well, the problem is because I'm so tall, and I have long legs, and it was getting bound up underneath, like, and it just was not working well. Mm-hmm. One of our teammates, Brent, is using the new Alien Gear, I think, is the thing.
Technically, I think it's like Rapid Force.
Yeah, I don't know. But it's got like a pivot
unit. Alien Gear is the parent company. Okay, gotcha. Rapid Force is like their duty line.
Okay,
that's basically what it is,
and it's got like a joint on it that moves with your leg. I think that works a little bit better, so that you don't have as many issues with. It's more like the gun holster is attached to your leg versus being attached to the belt, and then the pivot unit is there to obviously attach up to your belt so it doesn't fall off. But it's more maneuverable. I'd be curious how it stands up over time. Anytime you introduce like a screw and wear parts, I'm always worried they're gonna fall apart. But
that's true. But based off of what I've seen, the new Rapid Force holsters Alien Gear came out with, they're solid. I mean, you got guys like Milspec Mojo who's basically swearing by it, saying these holsters are better than the Safarilands. I don't know how true it is. He claims he's not sponsored. He claims he's not. He said many times he is not sponsored by them. But I think he has a video where either he broke a Safariland holster or he tried to break one.
Wow.
Or like he talked about how he has broken many Safariland holsters, but he could not break an Alien Gear. Like he stepped on it and he did. He said he's wrestled in it and just won't break.
Yeah, I think any case that there is competition in the market that causes the businesses to make more and better improved items and better looking for Tyler.
I'm sorry. Hey, what does Grand Thumb like to say?
Most important thing is looking good.
There we go. Come on. We got to listen to the flannel father.
That's right. So, there is something to be said with that. But I think, it does allow for improvements. Because the ALS holsters, the button on them is not great.
No.
At least mine, especially, because I have a previous generation, I think.
Yeah.
And it's just this tiny thing. And there are times when I go to draw where I will miss it. And I'm like, man, I really wish I did not have that problem. Yours is a little bit bigger.
Yeah. But mine's a newer model.
Correct.
So that's probably why you prefer mine over yours. Once again, it is a bigger one. And to kind of go back, so now kind of going back to my gear, I use S-Tech Kiwis as well for my mag holsters. I carry two pistols and one rifle because in this competition, we also use plate carriers, and my plate carrier has three AR mag holsters and two pistol holders as well. And I have a blue Force Gear micro medical pouch. I can't remember what they're called. I put that in my it's not my truly my small back. It's more, since I'm a lefty, it's like 7 o'clock, not a full 6 o'clock, because I'm a little too worried about falling down and breaking my spine.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'll admit that. Fair. It's slightly off-centered, and I also use a Blue Force Gear dump pouch. And like Philip was saying, it's a really nice and thin. It's really small when it's put together, but once I bring it out, it's pretty. It's a good sized dump pouch where I can put a lot of things in it. The problem is, because it's so slim, it flops everywhere. So I don't know how much I like it. I might end up getting a new dump pouch. I'm in the market for a new one right now. And I also carry a tourniquet at my front around the 2 o'clock area. I just like having a tourniquet up front, so this way it's there, it's visible, and I can grab it from with both of my hands if I need to. So that's what I have on my belt.
Yeah, and I'll mirror too. So obviously there's, being in the United States, the likelihood of war is a lot less in a place like Ukraine or Israel, right, who are currently engaged in war. But if you are going to have something on your belt, don't take it off for a match. Unless there's rules that say you can't have it.
Yep.
Leave it on there because you want to know how things function and work together. If that's the way that you're LARPing,
yep,
by all means, completely LARP the way that you're going to at a match that you would at home. Because otherwise, what's the point of the equipment on there?
Exactly.
Right. And we all have ways, the reason why we do stuff. Like, I keep my medical stuff on my carrier when I can. The match calls for a carrier. Again, with the roll one. Otherwise, I do move it down to my belt. And for reasons I'll get into in a second here with the body armor stuff. But definitely run stuff. And you will find, especially in training, you'll find when things don't work out the way that you expect it to. Even during matches, because there's stuff that you just can't train for, like going in and out of vehicles. You can train for some of that. But the way that you shoot through a vehicle, you don't want to like shoot in your car and get brass in there and like shoot out the windows on accident. Which
there again, are videos of that, man.
I know, crazy. I know. Or skipping around off your trunk or something like that.
Or people shooting through a VTAC barricade. I've seen those videos, man. Yeah,
exactly. So anyway, just run what you got. You know, don't take stuff off unless there's a requirement that says you can't.
Yep. Oh, and I have gloves on my belt as well.
Actually, as do I. And we actually learned that 2 years ago, you were wearing gloves. I was not. And we were in one of those cars.
Yep.
And we were getting out, and that car had been, the glass had been shot up in it in a previous course or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I went to get out, and I got glass all up the side of my hand and ended up bleeding the rest of the day, which
I forgot about that.
Fine. But I wish I had put gloves on at that point. And that was just a miscalculation on my on my part, just realizing we were going to be in and out of a vehicle that had been clearly shot up, that even the hot brass or whatever other garbage was still in the car from just being an old destroyed car.
I think we both use Magpul gloves, right? I know I do.
Yep. Yeah, I switched over to them just because they are, and gloves, always, they're consumable items. Expect to get, if you're wearing them, expect to get a year out of them.
Yep. And also, minor thing, I don't like Velcro gloves only because I feel like it slows me down.
Yes.
So I like to have a glove where I can just slip them right off. That's another reason why I chose Magpul. And they're thin enough to where I feel like I have enough dexterity in my trigger finger and still somewhat keep me warm, especially in the winter or if there's some glass around.
Yeah, I used to wear mechanics gloves and I was running into an issue with sizing because mechanics was... Their gloves were, like, a few generations were fantastic, and they were really fit my hands really well. And then they started messing with, I imagine, where their gloves were manufactured or something, and I would wear the fast-fit gloves, which were really nice for many years. And all of a sudden, the materials, like, the quality started going down a little bit, personal opinion, and then they just didn't fit the same. And I was like, man, I feel like they should fit the same from, like, year to year. So I got annoyed, and I ended up switching over to Magpul gloves. Immediately blew out one of the seams just based on my hand geometry, which... I had my spouse fix for me and have expanded on the size a little bit to fit a little bit better. But I can't. If you're gonna shoot with gloves on. Shoot all your stuff with gloves on because you never know when you're gonna need them and what like stage you may be in, or indoor, outdoor, in the cold, whatever. So practice with gloves on for sure and find out what works for you.
Yep. So plate carrier. What do you use, Philip?
So my plate carrier, I am a big fan of low profile stuff, and you'll find that this is a theme of my equipment, in general. So I actually wear a Ferro Concepts.
I like mine big and bulky. I want to survive. I want to have all the stuff.
And then, okay. And I have an advantage in this space too, and I'll dig into that in a second. I wear a Ferro Concepts Slickster, that I like, and I actually bought The first, this carrier hack, I had a different carrier in the past. I didn't like it. And I bought this carrier.
Wasn't it just some AR-500 carrier?
Yeah, it was one I got for like a really cheap price.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And I ran into issues actually with the way I was shouldering my rifle and the shoulder straps getting in the way.
Oh, yeah.
So, and I was not getting a good shoulder weld with that carrier. So switching to the Ferro Concepts, because it was a low pro and the straps fit, for me anyway, fit close to my shoulders. So I wasn't really noticing a difference other than just a little bit of bulk. Because we are wearing plates, we both run ceramic plates in our carriers. Mm-hmm. I actually have a cheap set of ceramic plates that I put in there to make weight, but also simulate the weight on the carrier itself. I run a pair of LA Police Gear Level 3 plates that can get me to the weight that we need to be for the competition. But I don't feel bad if I do break one, which feels weird because the ceramic should be fine if you fall on it or whatever. But if I damage it, they get wet or whatever it may be, I don't really care about them as much. And they work really well. They add the bulk that you need to, so you simulate running a pair of plates. But on the Ferro Concept Slickster, I have a few additions that I run specifically to make like quality of life improvements.
Yeah.
So I do run their shoulder pads because their default carrier is just a set of the nylon shoulder straps that really I found were digging into my shoulder. I bought their shoulder pads and that made them 1,000 times more comfortable to wear. So those things that you don't realize that you are a problem until you start running the carrier for training or whatever.
That's so true. Because I remember my first year, because I use an HRT carrier. And my first year, I had the low profile cummerbund, which mm-hmm. was basically just straps that went into that just clicked into place. And it kept loosening. I was getting dug into the sides. Yep. So then the next year, I bought a quick release cummerbund that they have. It was a little pricey, but it was substantially better. So it's crazy. I've made changes because of the Wolverine 5K to my equipment. I've realized like, hey, even though on paper this is nice, but in real life or in a situation where I'm using the kit, I'm going to have to make some changes.
Yeah, and this kind of match will definitely suss all the information out, especially for those of us who are civvies and don't wear this. Even if you're like a former military and you're buying your own stuff and you're like, hey, I don't like the stuff the government gave me, I'd like to make improvements, you're going to have to suss that equipment out. And you obviously were not at war with anybody, so the best way to figure it out is in a match like this, right? And you can get a lot of it during training, but sometimes, you know, with a match, they have more dynamic equipment that you can use that you may not have available to you mm-hmm. at home.
Or even you might be doing things you don't plan on, like climbing a wall.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Or flipping tires.
Yeah, but when are you going to flip tires in real life doing stuff this, though?
Or, like, doing crawling under barbed wire.
I was thinking that, too, because that was one thing I did have an issue with. My back panel for my play carrier was getting a little caught on the barbed wire.
Yeah.
So that was annoying.
So this is where I kind of mentioned earlier I have some advantages of because I'm so tall. There are disadvantages with it, and realizing those advantages and disadvantages based on your body type, your height, that kind of stuff. Because I am so tall, I do tend to run things more low profile just because I have that like
real estate.
I have the real estate to wear it. So in the front, I wear a dangler where I carry a lot of my random stuff. Mm-hmm. But again, I have that torso space. My carrier's not running into my belt like a lot of people are. With my plates running at the right spot where they're at. So there's some space in that torso. So I run the dangler in the front. So I put a lot of my random stuff that doesn't fit in the carrier in that dangler pouch. And then in the back, I run my medical and the roll one, which I found I really like that roll one a lot because it's also, if you're going to fall on your back, like Tyler was saying, you want to break your back or severely injure yourself if you have something on your belt.
Yep.
Well, the way the roll one is set up, because it's so long, you kind of spread out the equipment in there. And then in theory, it's not much thicker, if at all, than the carrier itself. And if you're going to fall on your back, you're probably going to fall on your plates and maybe whatever water pouch you have first, which is going to absorb a lot of that shock instead of actually falling on the roll one itself.
Yep.
So I love that thing. So all my medical stuff is in there. And I actually am changing some of the real estate I have mine coming up to get a tourniquet up front. As well, but I do keep all my medical in the back. And then in the front, for mags, I have 3 AR mags because all my pistol mags are on my belt. I have 3 AR mags. I'm actually going to change it up in the future to 2 AR mags, 2 pistol mags.
Yep.
But I just use one of the Feral Concepts, one of their front panels with the insert. That works really well. I don't use the bungee strips or anything. I just use the retention there. And I have crawled through the dirt on it in multiple occasions, and I've had zero issues with them falling out. And then in the back, because it is a Slickster, and they have a newer Slickster model now that has the MOLLE built into it, and you can actually, I think, get one too that's got zippers built into it for back panel use. This one, because it is slick, it has nothing on the back. There is a company called WTF Concepts, and they make a water or hydration pouch for the back of it that actually acts like a bikini over the Slickster itself, and it's super comfortable, and it fits just perfect on the back. So I put my hydration in there. There's also some on the back of it itself. There's some stringing in the back, like shoelace type stuff, where you can put additional things in if you need to. My opinion with the backpack is that hydration makes a ton of sense to have back there because you have the hose in the front to drink from. Anything that's in the back, especially behind you, makes it harder to get to. So if you're a teammate, they can pull it for you.
Yep.
Obviously, the roll one, you pull it out the side so you can still access it. But I don't put a lot back there, and I did not. And being so tall and crawling underneath stuff, I knew that was going to be an issue. At some point, I was running into that problem, catching up on the barbed wire. So having that stuff be pretty low profile, I did not have the issues getting hung up on items either. Just other random stuff I keep on there. I do a small folding knife that I keep in the front between the mags just for usage to cut stuff that I may run into periodically or clean out something where I need to get a knife to jab it in there to clean some dirt out or whatever. And then additionally, we both run radios. There was a requirement this year that you had to have radios with you. I don't think we use them for anything.
No,
previous, they had a requirement where we had a radio communicate. But we run radios on there. We actually found that it worked well for trying to position ourselves in to find out what there's 10 stages to find out which stages didn't have a backup. So we would radio between two people would run to find out like, yeah, exactly, to find out where what stages were open, and then the rest of us would follow up. So basically just two people go one direction, check the stages, two people go the other, check the stages, we'd radio and find out.
Yeah, back. Because it was interesting because my first year when we did recreational, we did the ruck basically first. We're one of the first groups to go through the ruck, and then by the time we got back, we were able to do all of the stages. This year when we did hardcore, we didn't do it until quite a bit later on in the day. So out of the 10 stages, we got like 5 or 6 done, and then we did the ruck.
Correct.
So we really tried to get as much done as we could. So this way, once the ruck was done, we could finish up the rest of the stages. And we did barely. We did finish all the stages. So yay for us.
Yeah, that was actually our goal for the day, and just getting as many points as we could on the board and getting all those stages done. And most of the high-performing teams as well finished them. Obviously, they're high-performing, so they got them all done and got all the points out of them as needed.
Yeah, not going to lie, there was Team Trigicon was there. Like, the actual Trigicon company, they have a team that did it.
Based out of Michigan.
Yep. And I remember there was one point, I think we were probably on, like, stage 7 or something like that.
Yeah.
And I look over, I see Team Trigicon. I'm like, dude, why are they all just sitting around? Like, man, are they just – I'm like, whatever. Come to find out, they were done.
Yes.
By the time we did five or six, they were done. And they won in
2023,
which was crazy, man. I'm like, all right, I'm done talking now.
they definitely planned it out really well.
Yes, they did. And they do it every year. So.
Yeah. All right, Mr. Bulky Armor, what do you run?
Yeah, bro. So like I said earlier, I run a HRT carrier with a Maximus placard, which has
Maximus Zeridius
from
Gladiator.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. Did you know they're coming out? I think they're coming out the second Gladiator.
Are they really? That's depressing.
2024 is
Russell Crowe is all chubby now.
I know. 2024 is the year of sequels. Did you see that?
Well, it's the like, writer's strike they got.
It's like Kung Fu Panda 4.
Wow.
Megamind TV series.
The Matrix 5. Just kidding.
I'm kidding. It's funny. I should probably out. None of these are sponsored by them, by the way. No. So being one of you people, sponsor us. But shh. I'm kidding. So I run a Maximus placard. I'm sorry. Yeah, Maximus placard for my HRT, and it has room for 3 AR mags and 2 pistol, and I have 2 administrative pouches in front of me. One of my AR pouches I actually use to put my radio in, since it's similar to how the S-Tech Kiwis work, where it's just a Kydex insert where you can put that's covered by a fabric. So inside my administrative pouches on the left side, that's actually where I put more medical equipment as well. And on the right side, that is where I have some survival stuff. I'll have like a multi-tool. I'll have like fire starters and random stuff like that. I think I have a knife in there now too. And underneath my placard, I will have a tourniquet and trauma shears as well. So now I'm basically doubling up with my medical equipment. Mm-hmm. A part of it is because I'm not always wearing my plate carrier, but right. I always have my belt on. Yep. That's why I like to have my medical kit on both of my equipment. And it's nice too, is because of the way that my carrier is, by having my medical, that mini pouch in the back, near the small back of my belt, it basically lines up almost perfectly with my plate carrier. So now, like, even we went to the range a couple of days ago, I could sit in your car, no issues, with yeah. a plate carrier yeah. and my belt, because it was basically like an extension of my body at that point.
Nice.
So I also have a radio on there, like I said, and I have a water hydration pack in the back.
Nice.
It's really nice, and it has an extra zipper for more stuff, but I typically don't put stuff in there because I want to keep it somewhat slim.
Yeah.
And once again, I don't really need to get to it because I have my administrative pouches in front of me. So
where do you keep your Haichu?
My Haichu? So I do have a snack. So for the Wolverine 5K specifically, I do add a dangler pouch as well. And that's where I put all of my snacks. I put
my snack pack.
I put my Haichus in there, and I actually did have electrolyte gummies as well in there.
Yes. Those were lifesaver for something like that. When you're going from 9 in the morning till 7 at night, mm-hmm. having that energy, like constant, pretty much
nonstop,
like, yep, yeah, just dumping energy into your body as much as you can.
Which is why it's crazy to me how I had so many cramps, because I had electrolyte gummies, I had coconut water, Gatorade, I ate bananas, and I probably had 2 gallons of water that day as well.
Maybe it's because you have just so many muscles, Tyler.
I don't know.
Compared
about
to
that.
The rest of us who have smaller muscles to feed.
I don't know about that, but it's crazy though how I had a tricep cramp this year, and I had a hamstring cramp the year before.
Yeah.
Who gets a hamstring cramp?
I don't know.
Get a hamstring
cramp. And Tyler was the youngest one on the team.
I know. It's crazy. Yep. But so that's really my equipment. Nothing crazy. I like it a lot. I love it. I know I'm a little bulky, but I'm a short and stocky guy. So everything's going to be bulky for me, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Where I've got more of the ability. And the other guys now, they all run HRT stuff as well, too.
Which is hilarious, because the first day we went training with the other two guys, I looked at Daryl, he looked at me, and we're like, yep, we are consuming the same information.
Yes, they had the exact same carrier, the exact same multicam.
Exact same belt. It was insane. Yeah. Like, we looked at each other, it's like, huh, yep. We listened to the same people. Got it.
Yeah.
So we laughed.
And Brent and I were the outliers because we were completely different.
And now Brent has an HRT carrier too. Yep. But his is in black.
Yes. Yeah, mine's all in gray. And I think the reason I got mine in gray, and I actually will plan on buying a Ranger Green at some point too, was just because it was the carrier I had. And at the time I was like, oh, it'd be nice to have something that will help reflect the sun instead of absorbing. But then I was like, this is kind of dumb. I spent all this money.
Didn't you start with Ranger Green
on this
too?
Carrier? I had OD Green.
That's what was
my
okay.
original. All right. So the one thing we mentioned earlier is there is the 5K part of this. It is not a like a run, like a traditional run and gun. This is definitely more of a ruck because of the weight that you are carrying. You're in these trails that are predominantly sand as well too. Now, you know, people will double time it. They're definitely the top tier teams like Trigicon, Team America, like those guys. They're definitely double timing the whole time, right? Because the score is determined by your time on the ruck, and then every point that you get in the match, which is, you know, an alpha on a target or pull ups or whatever activity it is, every point that you get reduces your score by a minute. So people will go negative. This year we end up with a score of 1, which is pretty good.
Did we really?
Yeah, we had a score of 1.
I forgot. So
yeah.
That's awesome.
But the top teams will definitely go negative. And there are teams that go positive, obviously. I mean, we did.
So what you're telling me is I should have done 4 pull-ups to put us at 0.
Yeah, we would have been 0.
Man.
But so for the backpack, I run a backpacking backpack over top of my carrier. So similar to Tyler, I carry my weight both on my carrier, because I figure if I'm going to do it, then I'm going to do it. And it helps distribute the weight too, which is nice. Mm-hmm. But I wear My plate's obviously in my carrier, so I don't even touch that. And then I have a Kelty backpack. And then what I did with that is I run a sandbag in the back of it because they weigh you at the end of the ruck. So you if you have water in it, and let's say you're making 45 pounds, but if you drink, you know, a few pounds off of that water mm-hmm. and you're below 45, they'll put you in a recreational.
I'll say a gallon of water is 8 pounds.
Yep. So I always I make sure I'm weight before I add my liquids
yep.
To it. And then go from there, and they have a scale that you can measure in advance yeah. to make sure that you're at where you want to be before you add your water, your hydration into it, or Gatorade or whatever it
and may be. And it's not like some super precise scale. It's like
yeah.
a analog fish scale,
yeah.
basically.
I mean, if you're 45 or near, you're probably going to be all right.
Yeah.
I was at 50 this year.
That's what I'm saying, because I have a basically a suitcase scale, a digital suitcase scale, mm-hmm. and I think both of... I think it was basically,
it was like
5 pounds heavier than yeah. their scale, which right. I'm like, oh, right, whatever.
Yep.
So worked
So that's
out.
Why I always check these things in advance, which is cool why they provide that for you is to make sure that you're there and you're making weight. Mm-hmm. But I run a sandbag that I had from the years previous. That combined with my body armor and a few free weights I put in there gets me easily up to the weight that I need it to be. And then I will stack, as weird as it sounds, ammo cans below it. Because it propping up the weight as high as I can on my shoulders just to keep the stress off of my back. And that actually works pretty well. That combo I've had 4 years. I've used that same backpack for the ruck. And I've been extremely impressed with it. I will constantly be adjusting it throughout the hike, which I think is fairly important. And it's kind of annoying because you're always messing with it. But it helps you distract yourself too when you're changing it. But just trying to keep moving that weight around so I don't burn hot spots into my shoulders or whatever it may be. Because you're already going to have challenges with it as well. I don't put hydration in the backpack itself and actually remove the hydration pack from like the actual bladder from my body armor so it doesn't get smushed. But I do run like, because it's a Kelty that's got it's a Red Wing, so it's got the two flaps on the side where I can put water bottles in. I drink off of those water bottles mm-hmm. throughout the hike. And that seems to have worked out for me every year. And again, I've had zero issues with that backpack this year.
Yeah.
Now, Tyler... A little non-traditional.
So if you get to know me, I am the type of person who is either 0 or 100. There's like no in between. I think of when I first bought my lawnmower, when I bought a house, I got one of those manual real lawnmowers. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It's like 1970s, 1950s lawnmower. Like yeah. really 30s yep. lawnmower.
The rotational
yeah. blade. And I tried to justify my brain. It's like, oh, it's better for the lawn. It's like using scissors versus like a shaver. It's better for it. And then after a couple years, I saved the money and I bought a
yeah.
Cub Cadet riding mower tractor.
Yeah. yeah.
So that's kind of what happened in this case. For our church, we had a men's night where we did a whole thing on a get-home bag. So I bought a duffel bag that has straps, a black duffel bag with straps, and I literally just used my get-home bag. Because
you had enough weight in there.
I literally had almost enough weight where I could carry, because I'm looking it up right now. So but it was for the ruck itself, you needed 45 pounds total.
Yep.
For your body armor with plates worn for the matches, it was 12 pounds without mags.
Okay, gotcha.
Yep. So it was funny how it worked. I had very minimal issues. There are times I had to retighten my duffel bag. It was nice because I had like a middle strap too. So it attached to my thing, no issues.
Yeah.
The only adjustments that I made was I took the back panel off completely mm-hmm. and I put the hydration into my duffel bag. I actually double hydrated. I had two different because
nice.
I already had a hydration basically bladder inside my get home bag. And what I did was I filled that with Gatorade and then my regular hydration pack was water. So this way I kind of went back and forth of like whichever one I was drinking out of. So this way I was getting my electrolytes in, not just water constantly. So it worked for me. No issues. To the best of my knowledge, weight was fine. So I had no issues.
Yeah, weight was good. I think you and I were pretty close on, mm-hmm. on the final weight when we pulled everything off.
Yeah.
Measured body armor with the backpack together.
So I probably will end up getting a more traditional ruck sack or a hiking backpack next year. Depends on how I feel and how much money I spend on stuff.
And I will say too, like with, and Tyler's a little bit old, younger than I am.
I'm older than you, huh, bro?
And, yeah. And I did run with my Kelty was an internal frame backpack, which really helps as well too. Oh, trying to get all that weight on the hips as well, where again, just being a little on the 40 plus 40 side from age perspective, it definitely helps out with just, you know, not being completely fatigued when you're done.
Yeah, I get it.
The one thing I did notice on the ruck too, and I know this isn't necessarily a backpack item, but with my carrier, I failed to mention too, I use just the basic like elastic cummerbund that comes with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I found for me, you want to make sure you have adjustment there because you're going to be puffing and huffing. And having that elastic in there, especially when you're hiking, was really nice. And I know that one of our teammates had some challenges with it being theirs being too tight on them when they were going. So again, test your stuff out. Find out what works for you. Just because elastic worked for me doesn't mean it was going to work for him. But I didn't have those issues. It was Daryl.
Interesting. Yep. He probably just had it too tight because
I think so.
I have the exact same carrier and cummerbund as him. And even though it is like a Molly more rigid material, in the back, it's connected by bungees.
Interesting.
So I think he just had it way too tight.
Yeah, I wonder too, because he's a smaller guy. I wonder if he had it like where they had the, I don't know, the way that it was hooked up in the back, maybe the bungee was not as effective as it could have been. Because, yeah, I mean, that's a good point, because that's supposed to be the point of the whole
bungees
thing.
In the back. I know, because like I said, I have the exact same
setup. Or maybe the backpack is restricting the bungee. I don't know.
Maybe.
So.
And he has steel plates, too.
He does have steel plates.
So that could be a part of it.
Yep, that's actually very true. That's a lot of weight on your chest.
Yeah, because of the way that the weight was distributed, that could have been it, too.
Yep.
Because it was really could be pushing more into his body. That's either way.
Yep. All right, so that kind of covers the primary items that we had with us. I kind of want to cover anything else that you may have had with you. I'll kind of kick it off just because I made a quick list of stuff. This is a lot of the gear that people love to think about, but there's also the under gear that I would like to call the pants, the boots, the shirt, the socks, eye pro, ear pro, those kind of things that you'd have with you. So I used, my wife's got me on the whole barefoot thing.
Yeah.
So I used a pair of Limbs, boulder boots, which are waterproof. And on this one, there was a small section of water we had to cross, that worked well. And I'll kind of get into that in a second. And they were waterproof, and I've used my other matches that have required some fording of water too, and it was always nice to have those. They're maybe a little bit hotter than like a traditional hiking boot in the summer, those boots are so comfortable, and I can wear them like the entire day and really not have any issues with them at all. What kind of boots did you run, Tyler?
So I understand and I agree to a point with the whole minimalistic shoe concept, but I don't like spending the money like that. I'll admit it. So
you're older, you will.
I get it. But I went on Amazon and I looked for, this is what I'm pretty sure this is what I typed. I typed in waterproof wide shoes.
Well, yeah, that works.
And that's what I found these. They're called High Tech Ravis. And that was like $40.
Nice.
And that's what I use for the 5K match. And that's what I use almost exclusively for shooting and pretty much hiking.
Yeah.
I have no issues with it. They are waterproof.
Yep.
And I love them. I would easily recommend them and order more. I love them that much. And I've used them now for almost a year.
And that is honestly like the way to go, where if you find something, even if it's cheap, and you realize that it may be more of a consumable item, but if it really works for you and it doesn't cause you blisters, it doesn't cause you like foot pain or anything like that, then by all means.
I think I went for a run in them before too, just to see what they'd be like.
That's pretty good.
So I have no issues with them. They're not like a true like wide toe box, but they're definitely wide enough where they work. Like I said, they're waterproof and they don't have like those cushions like they kind of talk about, like those really cushioned soles. I'm not a big fan of those, but they're definitely rigid and they work well.
Nice.
I have no issues. I love them a lot. Like I said, $40, no issues.
Did you do anything special for socks at all?
I wore my Costco wool socks.
Nice. That is actually, so I wore a pair of Wright socks. And it's basically it's a double layer set of socks. So they're supposed to rub on each other instead of rubbing on your feet.
Gotcha.
But in, I would normally recommend wool socks.
Oh yeah. Merino wool is the way to go.
Yep. And if you don't have a pair of right socks, especially depending on the weather that you're in, because when I was at the Zombie Invitational earlier this year, it was colder out, and I wore wool socks the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're going to cause less issues for your feet as well, too. And if they get, like, damp, like, it's going to be much easier on your feet than, like, a cotton or whatever else.
And I'm pretty sure I brought an extra set of wool socks in case as well, and an extra set of shoes in case something happened. That's what it was. I brought my boots as well as a backup in case these didn't work, but I ended up doing it for the ruck and the shooting and no issues at all.
Nice. Yeah, the right socks were nice, and I actually swapped out my right socks between the ruck and the stages, and I did carry them with me, so they were there, and I think anytime you talk to anybody, they're always like, swap your socks, you know.
I didn't. I'm serious. I had no issues. Yeah. I loved it. It was crazy.
Yeah, and I probably would have been fine without swapping them. I think just out of habit. Like,
that's fair. Them. I just, like I said, because when there was that area in the ruck where we had to cross the river, we knew ahead of time, so we had trash bags.
Yes.
It was funny because when we're done with the canoe section, there was a guy who came up to us like, hey,
we missed some intel.
We missed one of the checkpoints, the intel. There's an area where you have to cross the river. If you exchange with us information, we will give you some trash bags. And we looked at him and said, we have trash bags.
And he was so devastated in that moment.
He was like, oh.
And it's funny because, like, normally you'd be willing to share this kind of stuff because we're all quote unquote on the same team.
Yep.
But it was just the incident was so funny and so hilarious when it happened, and he turned around and didn't even bother to follow up, and he just kind of left.
He walked.
So we didn't even have a chance to share with him. He was just gone.
You would have shared? I wouldn't share. It's a competition.
That is fair. That is true. It is a competition.
The thing is, because it was we were in the hardcore division as well, so it is a competition. It wasn't life or death. I wouldn't share personally.
Right.
Because what was funny is they were right in front of us as well.
Yeah.
In the canoes. We saw them because there's a fork where you can either go left or right.
Yeah, one way into the other.
And the left, actually, if you looked at it, you could tell was more shallow.
Yep.
So they went the more shallow way. We chose to go right, and the right side was where the intel was. Yep. So we're like, dude, they just missed it. Because we knew you could not see it if you went left. And we knew it. I'm like, well, he just missed it.
And actually, that was a list that I had for other items I brought with me. It was trash bags.
Yep.
Because I knew from years previous that we had done the canoe that there was a part of a stream that you had to go across that was deep enough where you couldn't, or in wide enough where you couldn't jump over it, and there wasn't any sufficient way to cross it without having to walk through it.
And I think you might have been able to jump it, but it would have been safe.
Yeah, it would not, with all that gear, 45 pounds worth, it would not.
It's not worth it. It's not worth risking.
Toss the bag, maybe, but even with body armor and stuff, like, I wouldn't do it. So we put the trash bags that we had around our bags in the canoe part of it in case we dumped.
Yep.
Took them off, put them over our feet. It was hilarious because you're holding them up like the goofy looking trash bags while you're trying to go across the water. But we're not the only ones doing it. So we're like, and honestly, and when you cares? Get to that point, who cares?
Which is funny because Brent, I think there was a hole in his. Yeah, he didn't care. He just walked across. Yep. He's like, whatever.
Because it was warm and he had waterproof shoes.
Exactly.
Or they drained and dried pretty quick. Yep. So, and that was the other thing you can do too is if you have those shoes that are drainable, like, by all means, use it. And then again, with wool socks or right socks or whatever, they're going to not be an issue when this wet.
Exactly.
So that was one of the things I had. For pants, I bought a pair of, and I will probably change this for next year, and I actually got to figure this out. And being tall, it's difficult to find pants anyway. And finding tactical pants is also a challenge. But I wore a pair of, it was a pair of proper, it was from their like, more of a, I wouldn't say casual line, but more of their low profile line. And they were okay, and they were comfortable enough through the day, but I did find that I was not, by the end of the day, I was like, there's got to be something better, something a little more breathable. I may wear them again next year, we'll see, but they were just okay.
Gotcha. Yep. So I wore, they're just these
skinny jeans.
No, I'm not Lucas Botkin. I'm kidding, bro. Tights. Yeah, I respect you, man. And so there are a pair of these Wranglers that I got from a store that I probably won't be shopping at very often anymore. And there's
a women's store.
No.
I'm just kidding.
Whatever. And so they're just a pair of Wranglers. They're like $20. They work great. I basically use them at all my range time, and they're very breathable. And I believe, I can't remember, but I'm pretty sure I also wore a pair of compression pants underneath as well.
Oh, smart. Yeah, hot, but smart, I guess.
Well, compression pants are meant to be worn like that for exercise. I mean,
yep.
NBA players, that they wear compression pants and shirts, so they're sweating like crazy.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'm pretty sure that's what I did. I can't remember, but I'd be surprised if I didn't because of this. Yeah. And I'm also thinking because of ticks, because I actually did get a tick my first year. Thankfully, it was a male tick, so I had no issues. Because female ticks are the ones that transmit Lyme disease. Oh, male ticks do not.
Yeah.
Male ticks just bite on you. Oh, wow. Female ticks actually transmit stuff.
Oh.
I think that's what it was. If not, then vice versa.
Somebody will correct us.
I know. Someone's going to be like, you're wrong. Technically, male ticks do. I was like, okay, fine.
Yeah. Yeah,
shirts, we're all matching.
Yes, we all ordered a set of, because we were nerds, and the high school from Red Dawn was Calumet High School, and their mascot is the Wolverine, hence the Wolverine 5K. And we ordered a bunch of shirts from Teespring or something like that.
Custom.
Yeah, and I ended up ordering size up, and I regret that.
Yeah, I got ripped. I only know because the church that I work with, we used to order the exact same, like not from the same company, but like the shirt itself, the company, the brand, they're Bella and Canvas. They're like their tri material. Tri blend, con poly and something else. Probably lit. I don't know what it is. And I knew that they're two size. So when he said it, I'm like, hey, you do you, bro.
Yeah, that was a mistake. I ended up having my wife sew it down for me, and it was like the neck got uber stretched out, and then like some stuff started digging into my neck. So I think going forward, even though I liked having the whole matchy matchy shirt thing, I will probably wear a lightweight shirt with a collar.
I 100% agree with that.
And I think the reason was
that's what I did my first year, actually.
Yeah.
My first year, I wore a long sleeve golf shirt.
Yeah.
Because I already know people wear this for golfing, exercise, being outside, and I want long sleeve to protect myself from the elements and any possible ticks as well. And it protects my neck from my
sling.
Yeah. Sling and
damage, yeah.
And the
shoulder pads
of my carrier and the backpack too.
Yeah, and so it was fine and it worked out. But I think if I had gone more than one day, I would have regretted not having
100%.
A collar. And if you look at the military like combat shirt, they have a bit of a collar on them. And actually,
you have one now.
I do now for the zombie invitation. I wore one. It was really nice. So,
well, they're made for plate carriers.
Correct. Too. Exactly. So they do help protect your neck. Keep the sling from grinding into your neck. Because again, there's only one day. You can deal with anything for a day. But if you were to go beyond that and it would start grinding into it, then it would start causing pain, which would make you like a bit slower, a little less effective, and just be in pain in general. So I'm going to switch it up next year. I'll probably buy some really lightweight button-up shirt or lightweight shirt of some form, golf shirt, polo, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
Something with a fairly rigid collar to really help with keeping the sling off the neck.
Yep. I agree with that because I think my neck was definitely getting scratched up. And I don't think I put very much sunscreen. No, I did. I used some sunscreen. Yep. Ooh. Also, remember, get some type of chafing powder or chafe butter.
Some chafing butter.
Yep. I was very thankful because I think the first year you had some extra that you let me borrow because I forgot my chafing powder at home. So you had some extra like biker's butter or whatever it's called. Butter. Yep. And then this year I bought specific
Body Glide.
But
really good.
Basically that was very and that's what I have in my get home bag as well. So even if I forgot it, I would have had some anyway, either because once again I want to have something like that while I'm hiking, and think compression pants would help with that too. Yes, I did. That's true. I remember now I did wear compression pants.
Yep. Now you got to figure out the boxers. I wore boxers last year. It was not comfortable. And I got to figure out something more of a boxer brief type thing.
Yep.
And then for iPro, I use a pair of UX eye protection that fits my head well. They have, it wraps around the eye nicely and then actually wraps down. A lot of glasses don't wrap down. This wraps down to help protect with ricochets, which I really like. And they are obviously like UV sunglasses.
Mm-hmm.
For Ear Pro, I wear – everybody has different decisions. I wear a pair of Walker Silencer, which are in-ear units. I find that especially when I'm shooting a rifle, they tend to – just because of the geometry of my head, they tend to not – like if I wear over-the-ear earmuffs – they tend to knock back with like the way I shoulder my rifle.
Yep.
The in-ears I don't have issues with. I wear those for everything. They're electronic. I love being able to hear everything and think it's a safety thing. If you are not wearing electronic ears, then I recommend you look into a pair of it because they're really nice. And you can help with communication too.
And make sure it's stereo and not mono.
Yes, correct.
Because I know the walkers over the ear is mono. So I remember one time specifically, you and I went to a range and it was an outdoor range. It was at a man camp that we went to. Actually, it was a family camp.
Yep.
And we're at their shooting range at the stalls. And you were talking to me. You were on my right, and I looked left.
Yeah,
because that's right, thought you were mono. Because it was mono, so I couldn't tell which side you were coming from.
Yep.
So now I use the Howard Light Impact Sports over the ears, and now I can actually hear from which side because it is stereo.
Yep.
But I will be transitioning to an in-ear eventually, especially for this, because it's summer.
It's hot.
My ears are sweating. I don't have an issue with shouldering my rifle at all. Yeah. But I have seen, I know for you, and I've had another friend who has a larger head too, and same thing, they have issues shouldering.
You think I have a big head, Tony?
Huh?
You think I have a big head?
Yes.
I do have a big head.
You literally said that just like 2 minutes ago.
I have a big body and a big head.
Yeah. So but for me, I have no issues. So it's interestingly enough, thankfully enough, actually, so I can use quite a bit of different equipment. iPro, I use a pair of some Hex Armor protective glasses that was given to me. It worked just fine. I still use them to this day for shooting. They're better than what I had before. I think they're Walkers. They're okay. So the Hex Armors work great now. So
yeah, as long as it's something that you're using that has impact resistance.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, then you'll be all right. Just in case you take a ricochet to the glass. You don't want to shatter through.
Yeah, talk about ricochets, Philip. It's not like you've had, not here, but you've had that before to your finger, right?
I actually had this match. I got ricochet in the knuckles. Actually, it was a different match.
It was a different match,
But, like I hit in the face ricochets in the past, too. That's crazy, it happens. Man. I mean, it's just the nature of when you shoot.
Exactly. That's what
we're doing. So, protecting the vitals.
Yep.
Eyeballs.
Yep.
One other thing I had to carry with me was, and I think actually we both had this, because there was a canoe part of this year for the quote-unquote 5K part of it. It was actually 5K canoe and then a 5K ruck.
I know, right? I thought it was combined. I'm like, snap.
No, it was both. And because there's always a risk. And I saw somebody.
So it was a Wolverine 10K then.
Yeah. 5K times two. Yeah. The year before you joined up, we did the canoe. And somebody tipped their canoe. And they had, obviously, you don't want to be canoeing with your body armor on because you could sink. You know,
no kidding.
Most of the river was, you know, you could stand up in. Yeah. But there were sections of it that were definitely, you could drown in if you had your body armor on. So obviously people taking off their body armor, off their backpack. So it was just them. People have taken off sometimes shoes, that kind of stuff. Just so if you do tip, you're not going to drown.
Yep.
But they did not fasten down their backpack or their body armor to the bars in the canoe.
Mm-hmm.
And they lost thousands of dollars worth of body armor, backpack, and equipment into the river because they couldn't find it.
The one spot that was deep enough.
The one spot that was deep enough.
That's crazy to me, man.
Yep.
That
so stinks. So Velcro brand, you can buy it from Lowe's or whatever. They make these massive like Velcro straps that have a carabiner on one end of it.
That's like a big heavy-duty carabiner. So it's not like some cheap
it's super heavy-duty. You could do pull-ups on it if you wanted
to. Oh, yeah. I agree.
But we attached that to the gunwale of the canoe and then clipped it on to both the carry straps on the backpack and on the body armor. So if you do flip, it may go in the water, but you're not going to lose it as long as the canoe doesn't go completely under, which the likelihood is pretty low.
Oh, for sure.
Do you have anything else with your equipment, Tyler?
I wore a Garmin watch. That's about it. Yeah. I wore my Garmin Instinct 2 watch as well, which I mean, I like to have a watch on at all times. It does have a GPS function, but I did not use it because I'm not allowed to use it.
We're not dirty cheaters.
No. But even then, I feel like calling it a GPS watch is not fully.
You couldn't probably plot points on it.
No.
Right? Yeah.
I can't plot points on it. It can tell me like how to get back to MTC. That's probably about it.
Yep.
Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe I don't know how to use my watch as well, but I pretty much wear that every day, so that's really more EDC than anything else. That's really... I wore a ball cap.
I wore a hat. I didn't wear one.
But I always wear a hat when I shoot.
Yep.
Probably because I don't want my hair in my way, and also it's protecting my eyes from the sun, so that's... But I wear a hat all the time.
Yeah, a lot of it is just, you know, an event like this, especially from a gear perspective, really test out your stuff.
100%.
It's for a day, mm-hmm. so it's not like long-term use, but it is, it's pretty hard use. It's and it's a like, full day, man. Again, like we talked about, it's crawling underneath, you know, yep. faux barbed wire. It's, you know, getting down in the prone position, getting up, oh, you know, yeah. flipping tires, which you're not going to do in like a combat situation, no. but
those actions. You never know. You might, maybe well, not a tire, but you might something. Flip something yep. up. Yeah. And you don't want down
you don't want your
rifle.
Stuff falling all over you. Mm-hmm. The quality of the equipment, like obviously everything costs money.
Yep.
But there is, you know, there's the value to cost trade off with everything you get.
Best bang for your buck.
Yep.
That's my mentality.
Yeah. It's like we talked about, like, you know, Tyler ran PSA rifle, ran just fine. Yeah. I saw people that were running, like really expensive Walther pistols go down because they got grit in the pistol.
It's true.
Whereas, like, you'd have somebody running a Glock 19 that would have, or Glock 17 with zero issues.
Yep.
So maintain your equipment as well, along with it, you know, make sure things well oiled in advance, and clean. And protecting stuff and realizing the situations that you can get into. Just being aware of it. And you can never count for everything. It's
no,
not
of course
possible.
Not.
But
no.
again, you have teammates. So a lot of that is kind of relying on the teammates for those things that you may
exactly.
forget.
So I guess maybe since I have administrative pouches, maybe could be good to have maybe some oil in my pouch. Because once again, like, we, of course, this is a stage where we're going to have our wagons. We actually, I think we're thinking about setting up a tent, but we didn't do that this year. So we could wagon things around, but it would probably be smart for me to maybe have a little bit of gun lube in one of my pouches. So this way, if I needed to, because it can get really sandy.
Yes.
And I had mags that are covered in dirt and sand. I have my red dot that had some sand in it. And of course, it ran fine, but I don't know. For those who know me, I only clean my gun probably once or twice a year before and after the 5K.
Well, yes.
Basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because that's kind of how it is. But I know my stuff runs well, and I have no issues at all. So, or very minimal issues.
Yeah, and all in all, I think that everybody's equipment ran pretty well. I don't think there were any, we didn't have any, our team didn't have any major equipment failure.
Thankfully, yeah. I know when we were training, we had some issues.
Yeah, we had one guy that had issues with his AR.
Yep.
Which is since fixed. I mean, it was an issue with the bolt.
I think it was
the
bolt
key,
carrier.
Yeah, the bolt carrier, the key. Gas key came loose on the bolt carrier. He has since purchased a new bolt, which was I've fixed that issue, make sure that everything ran well with that. Mm-hmm. But again, those are things you suss out by putting your equipment through the ringer. All right, anything else to add on equipment before we wrap this up?
I think that's it. That's all I've got.
Awesome. Well, we thank you guys all for listening. The next episode, we're going to dig into the training and the skill sets needed. A lot of the stuff we kind of talked about today will... We'll talk about how that applies and the things that you can practice going into an event like this.
Yep.
The resources that you can pull, the skill sets that you need to know. Obviously, this is an event that is wildly different than any other USPSA match.
I agree.
Traditional three-gun, you know, nation match that you're going to do that requires a different set of skill sets and is kind of like a little primer. One of the things that we had to do this coming year was learning how to pick locks. Including handcuffs and deadbolts.
Yep, I hated it.
Not deadbolts, sorry. Like locks, like
just
a master lock.
Yeah, master lock, yeah.
So that was something, a skill set that we had to learn. And it was all announced in advance. We had time and chance to learn. This year, they're upping some of the physical requirements. They've announced them in advance so people can start practicing towards them, which is good because that just encourages physical fitness anyway. We'll dive into all that stuff coming up and all the hints and tips and tricks that we go into for practicing and stuff that just helps you out in real world anyway.
Yep.
But with that, thank you for listening. Feel free to follow us on Instagram under Acceptable Accuracy. We will post some photos there from previous matches. We'll post some stuff coming up as we start really releasing these episodes out to the public. With that, anything else to add, Tyler?
That's all I've got. See you next week.
You got any dad advice?
Nope.
No dad advice. I have dad advice.
Go for it.
Clean your firearms.
Yeah, sure, whatever. All right. Peace out.
See you, everybody.